It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey, Butte County, Jason Cassidy here, interim editor of the Chico News and Review. It's springtime, and in Chico, that means the leaf blowers and all kinds of machines are out. So during this show, as I record it here in my home studio, might hear my neighbor's leaf blower a little bit, but thanks for tuning in anyways. We are here every Thursday, 5:30 p.m., right after the Butte Report with Sue Hildebrand on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. Today's show is packed with interviews. Writer Ken Smith joins us to report on a homeless advocate who was arrested during a protest outside of the Tuesday night city council meeting, and we talked to two local artists, Chico Art Center Gallery Director Cameron Kelly, and Arts Instigator Claire Fong, about their pandemic art plans. First, a reminder. The print version of the Chico News Review is still on a monthly schedule. The last few months, it's come out on the second Thursday of the month and will continue to do so for the next two issues, which will hit stands March 11th, next week, and April 8th. After that, things will shift to first Thursdays. This past Tuesday night, March 2nd, a protester was arrested outside the Chico City Council chambers just minutes before the council's meeting. Robert Van Fleet was arrested while participating in a die-in style protest. The action was organized by local homeless advocates critical of ongoing sweeps of homeless encampments by Chico police and city staff under the direction of the recently elected Conservative Majority Council. It was also intended to recognize at least 18 members of the homeless community who have died in the last year. CNR writer Ken Smith was there to cover the protest and was witness to the arrest of Mr. Van Fleet. Ken, can you tell us what went down on Tuesday night?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. There was a protest outside of the council chambers. Wasn't really organized by anyone specifically. It was just kind of these things seem to kind of be happening organically now with this being such a visible issue in the community. So there was some calls to action from various advocates to meet outside of the council chambers before the meeting last night. And some of those people decided to hold a die-in, which was actually visually like a pretty powerful thing. There was a lot of people lying around with blankets and pillows, which is basically what the unhoused are allowed according to some of the city ordinances about storage of personal property and public land and whatnot. There was a lot of hubbub going around. There was at least, I counted 50 protesters by 5:30. And a lot of noise. Whenever any city officials would show up, there was a lot of booing and haranguing. Eric Gustafson got an earful. Pretty much anybody that walked by did. But there wasn't any sort of, you know, violence or contact or anything like that. There was people intermittently reading and kind of chanting the names of the 18 known members of the unhoused community who have died in the last year. So it was kind of a chaotic scene outside of the chambers. And some of the people participating in the die-in part of the ceremony lying down, actually blocked some of the stairways leading from the municipal building to the east side of chambers where most of the council members are known to enter through. They wanted to make sure that people you know, that the council members themselves actually witnessed their protest and create possibly the dramatic effect of having people have to step over them. Sure. But and then about 20 minutes before the meeting was supposed to start, the police came marching in, which was another kind of dramatic moment, a round of boos and everything as that happened. It's funny, I was actually listening to my tapes, and the first thing is Lieutenant Williams, Mike Williams, who was kind of in charge of the operation, walked up to the two people at the bottom of the steps, which was Chris Nelson, a longtime activist, and Robert, the gentleman who ended up getting arrested, and said, "Okay, I'm going to need to ask you folks to move along." It was kind of ridiculous. Like, I mean, essentially what they would say to a homeless person.
Exactly. Yeah.
So since those two were the ones blocking the stairways, they received most of the police attention. The police were kind of asking them to move. They both made kind of a determined effort and decision to not move. Chris Nelson stated that she'd move at 6 o'clock when it started, as they were threatening over the citation. And I don't know why, but they seemed to agree to that. Robert Van Fleet, they initially asked him, you know, told him he's blocking the stairway. He did actually move slightly, just kind of into a diagonal position to make sure. I mean, he wasn't actually blocking the stairway as it was. There was room to pass. There was people up and down the stairway all night. So he moved his body to kind of at an angle just to comply with him that much. But beyond that, you know, they kept, you know, telling him again to get up and move, threatening with citation and arrest. And as he states, and actually interviewed him the morning after his arrest, that, you know, he, as an activist, did make a conscious decision as he was laying there thinking, well, should I do this?
We have a recording of your interview. Let's listen to what Mr. Van Fleet has to say.
So when I heard about the die-in last night, I thought, this is something I want to take part in, because I think those of us who are trying to make a difference need to step up our game. I think we need to be a little bit more assertive, aggressive, whatever, and civil disobedience, which I've been involved in other issues elsewhere, I think is often what real solutions come from. It's not usually governmental or other agencies that makes a good significant change, but it's people in the streets willing to make some sacrifice to stand up for what they think is right and what they think is wrong. So
if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review show on KZFR. That was a snippet from an interview by writer Ken Smith with Robert Van Fleet, a homeless advocate who was arrested before the city council meeting on Tuesday night. What was Mr. Van Fleet charged with, Ken?
Let's see. So according to the police, his official charge was obstructing or interfering with a police officer, or a peace officer, rather. But I asked the police on scene, Lieutenant Mike Williams, who was kind of running the operation, and he said that it was for a city ordinance, and that also Mr. Van Fleet didn't provide identification when they asked him, which I believe is actually not a valid reason to arrest anybody. But he actually said, yeah, city ordinance, which another officer was able to tell me the code, got home, looked it up, and it was actually an alteration to city municipal code made in 2015 as part of the offenses against public property ordinance. Which is ironic, because
that's a homeless.
Yeah, that was aimed specifically at targeting the homeless and giving the police a reason to be able to cite or arrest people. And it's funny that it comes full circle now to be justification to arrest somebody engaging in a protest against homelessness.
So the charge that he did get, but that was a misdemeanor?
Yeah, misdemeanor charge of obstruction, I believe, is the term. And as I mentioned, I talked to him the next morning. He said that he was actually taken to the, for one thing worth noting, he is 74 years old and informed the police that he has back problems, that it was going to take him a moment to get up. And you can actually see him kind of struggling to rise on the video. And I guess this became more of an issue as when they finally walked him all the way out to the car, which was over on Fifth Street. They did put handcuffs on him, which he said hurt his back pretty bad. And then they were directing him to climb into the car, which if you've ever been in the back seat of a police car with cuffs behind your back, it's not comfortable to maneuver into that situation, sure, especially for a big dude like me. So regardless, he complained about it for a while, and then eventually, as he told me in the interview, just said, well, hey, let's just get this over with. And was initially told that he'd be taken to Oroville and actually be checked into the jail. Wow. But instead, they drove him to the Chico police station off Highway 32. He said there was some calls back and forth, and they actually dropped at least one charge that they intended to charge him with. He wasn't quite sure what. And then after some processing, he was actually out in less than an hour and said by 7 o'clock he was back at the city council chambers, seeing if there was anybody still there, if the protest was going on, which by that time it had pretty much broken up and kind of continued onto there was some kind of more protesting in the Zoom interaction during the council meeting. So overall, he has a court date in April, and yeah, that's where it stands.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Right on, man. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. Next up, art. Like all arts venues, the Chico Art Center has had to adapt due to the coronavirus, and the gallery has managed to stay active despite the pandemic. The driving force behind that activity is gallery director Cameron Kelly, who has tapped into her skills as both an artist and arts educator to reframe this longtime community resource as an online space. And we spoke with her via Zoom.
Hey, Cameron, how's it going?
Great. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for joining us here to talk a little bit about the Chico Art Center. You guys, like a lot of people, have been having to do virtual shows. And you've done a few Birds of a Feather, your member showcase. And there's a new one what was your February show, Unbound, the Altered Book, with a really interesting directions for the artists to transform a book's original state or meaning. How did the show turn out?
Oh, you know, this COVID has really, really pushed us in ways that we would have eventually gotten to, meaning having to shift our exhibitions to virtual only was something that the board and I had been talking about doing, you know, because we are, Chico Art Center is a gathering place for artists and ideas, and our mission is to bring patrons and artists together. And we've been talking about how can we expand our audience, and going virtual, meaning making the exhibitions online, was something that we wanted to, but the pandemic really pushed us in that direction. So now we're fully online, and Unbound, the Altered Book, was actually postponed twice because of the pandemic. But what's been really wonderful, like one of the challenges for having the exhibition in person was that it was a national call. So artists from all over the US were applying, and initially were applying with the limitation of, you know, usually altered books are quite delicate, or installations, and so to transport that is really involved. Sure. So when we went virtual, it actually, and then extended the deadline, it really opened up the possibility of having more, in some ways, expansive works. An artist that would, you know, normally would not come to our receptions, you know, from New York and Chicago are joining us virtually. So it's been really great. I've really enjoyed seeing both local artists exhibit virtually for this exhibit in particular, and then also have their work side by side with, you know, like I said, Buffalo, Wisconsin, and some of these altered books you'll see are quite involved installations. So if the artist can photograph their work well, which is another skill set, sure, they are able to present this work to a wider audience. So not only is their audience from Chico, but from all over. And that's been really, really rewarding to be a part of and to facilitate.
And do you facilitate, there's others like extras with the shows too. Do you have like videos, talks, and receptions? Is that you doing that as well?
Yeah, that's me. That's me. Luckily, because I've undergone a lot of training for teaching online over the last year, I've applied those skills to Chico Art Center's exhibition schedule. So every exhibit, we've kind of stuck with the monthly exhibition schedule, and every exhibit has had a Zoom reception. And and sometimes that's like skill sharing. So sometimes an artist, or usually we have around four artists, four to six, or, you know, or maybe one or two, but some artists choose to give us a tour of their studio, which is great. Or we had a jeweler, you know, show us her workbench and kind of demo some of her tools. We've had some artists that feel really comfortable by now with Zoom and give their own slideshow of more of their work. So it's been really great. We've had guest biologists, permaculture experts talk about, like, for example, for the endangered flora, the endangered species exhibition. It was a national call for art, and our two jurors were, one was a horticulturist at Chico State, and the other was a permaculture consultant that gave their feedback and responded to the work in the exhibit, which was great. It was cross-cultural, many backgrounds coming together and, you know, sharing an interest in visual beauty. And those kinds of meeting points have been really rewarding.
How people, like patrons, responded to the shows being online?
Yeah, that's been interesting, because I think for Chico Art Center's kind of our core membership, I think that has been a challenge, because not everyone is a Zoom person, and especially in the beginning. But now that we are a whole year into it, now we have, you know, if you are retired, you're still Zooming with your children and your family and your grandkids. So by now, I think we've had four or five Zoom receptions by now. And by now we have most people have come around. And so that's really been interesting to engender a new culture, right? A new way for us to be engaging with each other. And it's true, the technology, I think, was a limitation for many of us in the beginning, but because it's been relatively universal, this challenge, many of us have come along. But yes, it's, you know, it definitely creates a limitation for those that don't have streaming internet and Zoom and these things.
The shows are always, they have like a run, you know, March or February, January, but I've noticed that you've kept them online. Is that something you'll continue to do?
Yeah, this is another kind of blessing in disguise, because this way all of the exhibitions are archived. And so there's no closing dates. And I'm really enjoying that. I mean, it's having new challenges because it's creating different opportunities for fundraising. For example, instead of, having, needing equipment, we're needing to buy like more server space. That's what we're currently, doing right now is fundraising to build up our server because all the images are stored now on our website. But I think it's progressive. It's more ways to be accessible to a larger audience. And I think in the long run, engendering this new culture of visiting the website, something that I think most folks that go to Chico Arts Center don't typically do. I think it's expanding our way of taking in information. In many ways, I mean, this idea of accessibility is a new, not new, but it's a challenge that keeps growing, right? And it's expanding. Sure. And so like folks that love Chico Arts Center that can't leave their home can hopefully reach out to us and we can still meet. So I'm kind of taking on the challenges as opportunities.
It's possible that you might have patrons in the gallery soon, right?
Yes.
If you go to red tier, does that mean you get a lower attendance like cap on it?
That's right. Yes. But in the beginning of the pandemic, we rent from the city of Chico. And so we talked with them about how, what the city is comfortable with us, how many hours they're comfortable with us having. And in combination with, we're a volunteer organization, as you know, so our volunteers keep the doors open. So it looks like if everything goes along, the trends that they are, that in terms of COVID trends, COVID cases, it looks like we'll be able to open in May for our California Contemporary Sculpture Exhibition.
You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. We've been talking to Cameron Kelly of Chico Art Center, and we're joined now on the Zoom call by local artist Claire Fong, who is working with Cameron together on a new art show that's coming to the 1078 Gallery. That's correct, right?
Yeah.
It's called Imagine Together. I'm going to read what your call to the artist says here. You asked some questions. How can your imagination transform the world into a more loving and inclusive place? How can your imagination help make the future a hopeful and joyful place where there is room for everyone? That's really beautifully said. Tell us about the show. What are you hoping for with the show?
Yeah, great. So I have been very inspired by science fiction my whole life. And I find that within that genre, there is a lot of representation that is missing from other genres. So I grew up on Star Trek Next Generation, where there were female lead characters, there were people of color, and there was just this idea of inclusivity and a desire to build bridges between different cultures, different species, different worlds. And that has been so inspiring to me my whole life. And I was talking to Cameron about this as a kid. My childhood was not ideal. So looking at these alternative versions of the future were just so, brought me so much joy and hope. And then going into the pandemic and just seeing this so much tragedy really highlighted in the world. And then the murder of George Floyd happened. And there was just this real shift in perception from a greater population to want to see justice in the world. So I was thinking, how can I bridge these things that I feel so passionately about, my activism and my work around social justice with my love of art and my love of science fiction.
Well, I mean, that's artists create reality. I mean, that's what they do. And it's neat to imagine that people really sink their teeth into the idea of imagining a better world and creating that reality. I mean, do you see that? I mean, Cameron, you put calls out for art all the time. This seems to be one of the more creative calls for art that I've seen in a while. Do you expect to get a good, you know, a wide response from something like this?
Yes, I mean, I've loved working with Claire to just shape her vision for her the way she would like, you know, this opportunity to reach out to as many people as possible, because it's a very utopic theme, you know. I mean, yeah. It's about taking joy in what you would like to see around you, and how the world can serve you, and vice versa. So what Claire and I have been talking about is, so how can 1078's platform, you know, how can their website, how can their Instagram, how can their Facebook be a platform, be a pedestal, a stage, for a microphone for children, sure, retirees, teachers, even people that don't even identify as artists, you know? I mean, certainly we want artists, but everyone has a vision. And so so that's why this call for art, or call for submissions, is pretty open. You can submit a written story, and they have to be relatively short, so just 2,000 characters. You can record yourself reciting your story. It could be poetry. You can make a short film, 3 minutes or less. You can dance about it, again, 3 minutes or less. And then, of course, you can paint, draw, you can make photography, 2D, 3D. And so it can be visual, it can be auditory. And Claire and I will use 1078's, all of our, you know, our platforms, are the ways that we can technologically make those visions shared.
Claire, you're an artist. Are you going to make anything?
Oh, yeah. So my first art form that I really embraced was dance.
Okay,
I was a ballerina. I was a ballerina for, you know, a good deal of my childhood. And yeah, that's where I feel a lot of joy come from, in dance. Nice. And yeah, so I have a little collaborative project I'm working on with Aaron Lizardo and a few other people.
Right on.
Yeah. So definitely some like futuristic costumes. And then Scott Barwick, my partner, is going to make some music for us. So oh, yeah.
Really, I mean, that alone right there, you have a show. Well, cool. What are the details about how people can enter if they're interested?
Ah, well, all you have to do is go to 1078gallery.org. And the deadline is, let's see, what did we say? End of March, I believe, March 28th.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you both so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Chico News and Review is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Dr. Michael Shewell, clinical psychologist offering psychotherapy for adults and play therapy for children. Dr. Shewell helps people find meaning and depth in their lives and deal with issues including depression, anxiety, and trauma. Dr. Shewell also works with children as young as 5. Located in Chico, Dr. Shewell can be reached at 891-6292. And by Bruce Jenkins Insurance, a retirement advisor offering Medicare assistance, including prescription drug and supplemental plans, Social Security maximization, retirement income planning, and life insurance. You can reach Bruce Jenkins Insurance at 530-781-3592 or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com. Thank you once again for tuning in to the Chico News and Review, and thank you KZFR 90.1 FM for hosting us each Thursday at 5:30 p.m. And as always, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes this show. And don't forget, next week, the new print edition of the Chico News and Review comes out. Find it in racks all over Butte County, and find us online at chico.newsreview.com. Take care.